University of Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. November Examinations Series 2014. English as a Second Language. Extended Tier. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the test. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the test. Look at questions 1 to 6. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. You will hear each item twice. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answers should be as brief as possible. You will hear each item twice. Question 1. What will the boy give his mother for her birthday?
Oh dear Marie, I just don't know what to buy my mum for her birthday. I've just found this box of chocolates, but she's trying to lose weight.
So maybe not chocolates. What about flowers? But I've got a better idea. In the market, there were some big baskets of fruit. They look beautiful. You could buy her one of those. And maybe get a small bar of chocolate and put that in the basket too.
Great idea. But I won't get the chocolate. I'll put a ribbon round the basket to make it look nice. That will be perfect. Oh dear Marie, I just don't know what to buy my mum for her birthday. I've just found this box of chocolates, but she's trying to lose weight.
So maybe not chocolates. What about flowers? But I've got a better idea. In the market, there were some big baskets of fruit. They look beautiful. You could buy her one of those. And maybe get a small bar of chocolate and put that in the basket too.
Great idea. But I won't get the chocolate. I'll put a ribbon round the basket to make it look nice. That will be perfect.
Question 2. What sort of book does the girl decide to read?
Excuse me, Mr. Hathaway, but I wondered if you could help me choose a new book to read. I just don't know where to begin.
Of course, I'll do my best. Let's see. Perhaps start by telling me your favourite kind of book. Do you like spy stories?
I think I've read all the best ones in that section. And I've read all the romance fiction in this library.
Would you be interested in reading about what life might be like in the future? The science fiction section might interest you. Take a look. It's just below the history section.
Thanks. I'll try it. Excuse me, Mr. Hathaway, but I wondered if you could help me choose a new book to read. I just don't know where to begin.
Of course, I'll do my best. Let's see. Perhaps start by telling me your favourite kind of book. Do you like spy stories?
I think I've read all the best ones in that section. And I've read all the romance fiction in this library.
Would you be interested in reading about what life might be like in the future? The science fiction section might interest you. Take a look. It's just below the history section.
Thanks. I'll try it.
Question 3. A. What is Ahmed doing on Tuesday, the 17th of November? B. Give the date of his new appointment.
Hello, my name's Ahmed Jaffrey. I have an appointment with the dentist on Tuesday, the 17th of November. I'm phoning to postpone it, I'm afraid. I've got my driving test that day. Can I make a new appointment?
Yes, of course. Can you manage the following week, Thursday the 26th?
That's no good for me. How about Friday the 27th?
Yes, that's fine. Is 10:30 okay for you?
Yes, thank you. Hello, my name's Ahmed Jaffrey. I have an appointment with the dentist on Tuesday, the 17th of November. I'm phoning to postpone it, I'm afraid. I've got my driving test that day. Can I make a new appointment?
Yes, of course. Can you manage the following week, Thursday, the 26th?
That's no good for me. How about Friday, the 27th?
Yes, that's fine. Is 10:30 okay for you?
Yes, thank you.
Question 4. What drink does Helena choose?
Let me buy the drinks today. What would you like, Helena?
I'd just like a coffee, please. Oh, actually, I'll have a tea.
Are you sure? I'm having a hot chocolate.
Oh, go on then. I'll have the same.
Let me buy the drinks today. What would you like, Helena?
I'd just like a coffee, please. Oh, actually, I'll have a tea.
Are you sure? I'm having a hot chocolate.
Oh, go on then. I'll have the same.
Question 5. Where did the girl find the trousers she wanted?
Excuse me, have you got these trousers in a size 14, please?
Most of our ladies' trousers are out on the shelves near the lifts.
Yes, that's where I found this pair, but they're the wrong size.
Sometimes people put them back in the wrong place. Did you look in the special office section? Let's take a look. It's just behind you. Follow me.
Oh, yes. Thanks very much. Now I can see the ones I was looking for. Excuse me, have you got these trousers in a size 14, please?
Most of our ladies' trousers are out on the shelves near the lifts.
Yes, that's where I found this pair, but they're the wrong size.
Sometimes people put them back in the wrong place. Did you look in the special office section? Let's take a look. It's just behind you. Follow me.
Oh, yes. Thanks very much. Now I can see the ones I was looking for.
Question 6. A. Which kind of ticket is the cheapest? B. When must you travel if you buy this ticket?
A return train ticket to Glasgow for Saturday, please.
We have a couple of weekend deals, and they're both cheaper than our normal day return tickets. Do you want a shopper's return ticket or a Super Saturday ticket, which is even less expensive?
What's the difference?
Well, with the shopper's return, you have no restriction. You can travel on any train you like between 5 a.m. and 11:30 p.m. on the same day. A Super Saturday is one where you have to leave after 9 in the morning and then return home before 5 p.m.
I see. I'll have to think about that. A return train ticket to Glasgow for Saturday, please.
We have a couple of weekend deals, and they're both cheaper than our normal day return tickets. Do you want a shopper's return ticket or a Super Saturday ticket, which is even less expensive?
What's the difference?
Well, with the shopper's return, you have no restriction. You can travel on any train you like between 5 a.m. and 11:30 p.m. on the same day. A Super Saturday is one where you have to leave after 9 in the morning and then return home before 5 p.m.
I see. I'll have to think about that.
That is the last of questions 1 to 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. Listen to the following interview with a man called Lars Eriksson, who works in a hotel made of ice. Then complete the notes below. You will hear the interview twice.
Today we have Lars Eriksson here to talk to our tourism class all about a new hotel that has recently opened in Sweden.
Actually, it opened some years ago, so it's not really new. But then, in another way, it is new, because it has to be rebuilt every year. Let me explain. When we built our hotel, we wanted to use a different construction material, instead of the normal concrete and glass. I suppose we could have used local materials such as wood and stone, but in the end, we decided to build it entirely from snow and ice.
Perhaps you could tell us a little about the origin of this hotel. Who first had the idea of sleeping and staying in a building made of ice?
It came about almost by accident. It started in 1989, when some ice sculptors visited the town and held an exhibition in the town hall. Then the following spring, an artist came from France and held his exhibition in a room he had built out of ice blocks. One night, there were no rooms available in the normal hotels in town, and some visitors asked permission to spend the night in the ice room. And so the idea of the ice hotel was born.
So how is your hotel made?
When the temperature drops in November, the building starts. The snow is sprayed onto huge steel structures, which are like giant moulds. When the snow has frozen solid, the moulds are removed and a maze of corridors is left behind. In early December, artists move in to design and build the rooms, and the hotel is ready for visitors by mid-December. But it doesn't last very long. By the end of April, everything has melted away.
And how much snow and ice do you use every year?
In March every year, the ice hotel collects snow and ice from the frozen River Torn, which is nearby. They collect over 10,000 tons of ice, which is then stored and used for creating ice sculptures. About 4,000 tons of it is used for art sculpture classes. We then collect 30,000 tons of snow, which is stored until we need it for the construction of the hotel later in the year.
Tell us more about what it is like inside the hotel.
Our hotel is the largest ice hotel in the world. It covers around 6,000 square metres. The hotel has a restaurant and coffee shop, a reception, and hotel rooms for over 100 guests. Everything in the hotel is made of ice, including the glasses you drink from, the chairs, and the beds.
Oh dear, I'm afraid that doesn't sound very comfortable. How do you get any sleep on a bed of ice?
The temperature is always between -5 and -8 Celsius, and that's very cold indeed. But the ice bed has a thick mattress that rests on a wooden base. To go to sleep, you get into a sleeping bag, so you actually feel very warm.
That's reassuring. And how do the guests spend their days?
In the morning, the staff wake you up with a cup of hot fruit juice. Then there are all sorts of interesting activities. You might choose skiing or skating lessons, camping in the frozen wilderness, or a ride on a sled pulled by a team of trained dogs.
It sounds great.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Today we have Lars Eriksson here to talk to our tourism class all about a new hotel that has recently opened in Sweden.
Actually, it opened some years ago, so it's not really new. But then, in another way, it is new because it has to be rebuilt every year. Let me explain. When we built our hotel, we wanted to use a different construction material instead of the normal concrete and glass. I suppose we could have used local materials such as wood and stone, but in the end we decided to build it entirely from snow and ice.
Perhaps you could tell us a little about the origin of this hotel. Who first had the idea of sleeping and staying in a building made of ice?
It came about almost by accident. It started in 1989, when some ice sculptors visited the town and held an exhibition in the town hall. Then the following spring, an artist came from France and held his exhibition in a room he had built out of ice blocks. One night, there were no rooms available in the normal hotels in town, and some visitors asked permission to spend the night in the ice room. And so the idea of the ice hotel was born.
So, how is your hotel made?
When the temperature drops in November, the building starts. The snow is sprayed onto huge steel structures, which are like giant moulds. When the snow has frozen solid, the moulds are removed and a maze of corridors is left behind. In early December, artists move in to design and build the rooms, and the hotel is ready for visitors by mid-December. But it doesn't last very long. By the end of April, everything has melted away.
And how much snow and ice do you use every year?
In March every year, the ice hotel collects snow and ice from the frozen River Torn, which is nearby. They collect over 10,000 tons of ice, which is then stored and used for creating ice sculptures. About 4,000 tons of it is used for art sculpture classes. We then collect 30,000 tons of snow, which is stored until we need it for the construction of the hotel later in the year.
Tell us more about what it is like inside the hotel.
Our hotel is the largest ice hotel in the world. It covers around 6,000 square meters. The hotel has a restaurant and coffee shop, a reception, and hotel rooms for over 100 guests. Everything in the hotel is made of ice, including the glasses you drink from, the chairs, and the beds.
Oh dear, I'm afraid that doesn't sound very comfortable. How do you get any sleep on a bed of ice?
The temperature is always between -5 and -8 Celsius, and that's very cold indeed. But the ice bed has a thick mattress that rests on a wooden base. To go to sleep, you get into a sleeping bag, so you actually feel very warm.
That's reassuring. And how do the guests spend their days?
In the morning, the staff wake you up with a cup of hot fruit juice. Then there are all sorts of interesting activities. You might choose skiing or skating lessons, camping in the frozen wilderness, or a ride on a sled pulled by a team of trained dogs.
It sounds great.
That is the end of question 7. In a moment, you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8. Listen to the following talk about a spacecraft and the gold disc that it carries. Then complete the following details. You will hear the talk twice.
Today I'm going to tell you about a spacecraft that was launched into space many years ago, in 1977. Its name, Voyager 1. And this spacecraft, amazingly, is still flying strong. In 2012, Voyager 1 was the first spacecraft ever to reach outer space. In fact, it's now 18 billion kilometers away from Earth. Voyager 2, a similar spacecraft, is 14.8 billion kilometers away. Voyager 1 is actually a very small craft. It's about 3.7 meters across and weighs 722 kilos. That's not much bigger than a family car, and not much heavier than a washing machine. Of course, the rocket that launched it was quite enormous in comparison. The project has cost a lot of money, but how can you put a price on the fascinating photographs sent back from Jupiter, showing that there are volcanoes on one of its moons? And the detailed images of Saturn's rings have amazed the world. So, how advanced is the technology on this tiny spacecraft? Well, very poor by today's standards. In fact, the average smartphone in 2014 has thousands of times more memory than Voyager 1. Yet most of the instruments on board the vessel still work, and they continue to send signals back to Earth. The scientific team in charge of it believes it still has enough power to operate all its instruments until the year 2020, when they will start shutting down one by one, until the spacecraft finally goes silent in 2025. But besides all the scientific equipment, Voyager 1 carries on board a really interesting item: a large disc made out of solid gold. So what did they put on this disc? The scientists interviewed members of the public and asked what images they would like to include. Younger pupils at school suggested pets and wild animals. Teenagers favoured film stars. Adults preferred historical figures. There are audio recordings too. There are examples of music from a range of different cultures. The disc contains greetings in 56 different languages. There are other natural sounds, such as thunderstorms. And there are some personal messages from world leaders too. The scientists made the final decisions. They selected pictures and sounds in order to represent the diversity of life forms on our planet. In addition, they included many images of scientific interest, such as diagrams of the solar system and its planets. They hope that the disc will give any intelligent life forms in the future an idea of what we were like in the 20th century. You may be asking yourself how a being from outer space will be able to play such a disc. Well, the instructions are engraved on its metal cover. Let's hope they can read English and have the right kind of equipment to play these discs. Meanwhile, it seems Voyager 1 is destined to wander the Milky Way forever.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Today I'm going to tell you about a spacecraft that was launched into space many years ago, in 1977. Its name, Voyager 1. And this spacecraft, amazingly, is still flying strong. In 2012, Voyager 1 was the first spacecraft ever to reach outer space. In fact, it's now 18 billion kilometers away from Earth. Voyager 2, a similar spacecraft, is 14.8 billion kilometers away. Voyager 1 is actually a very small craft. It's about 3.7 meters across and weighs 722 kilos. That's not much bigger than a family car and not much heavier than a washing machine. Of course, the rocket that launched it was quite enormous in comparison. The project has cost a lot of money. But how can you put a price on the fascinating photographs sent back from Jupiter, showing that there are volcanoes on one of its moons? And the detailed images of Saturn's rings have amazed the world. So, how advanced is the technology on this tiny spacecraft? Well, very poor by today's standards. In fact, the average smartphone in 2014 has thousands of times more memory than Voyager 1. Yet most of the instruments on board the vessel still work, and they continue to send signals back to Earth. The scientific team in charge of it believes it still has enough power to operate all its instruments until the year 2020, when they will start shutting down one by one, until the spacecraft finally goes silent in 2025. But besides all the scientific equipment, Voyager 1 carries on board a really interesting item, a large disc made out of solid gold. So what did they put on this disc? The scientists interviewed members of the public and asked what images they would like to include. Younger pupils at school suggested pets and wild animals. Teenagers favoured film stars. Adults preferred historical figures. There are audio recordings too. There are examples of music from a range of different cultures. The disc contains greetings in 56 different languages. There are other natural sounds, such as thunderstorms. And there are some personal messages from world leaders too. The scientists made the final decisions. They selected pictures and sounds in order to represent the diversity of life forms on our planet. In addition, they included many images of scientific interest, such as diagrams of the solar system and its planets. They hope that the disc will give any intelligent life forms in the future an idea of what we were like in the 20th century. You may be asking yourself how a being from outer space will be able to play such a disc. Well, the instructions are engraved on its metal cover. Let's hope they can read English and have the right kind of equipment to play these discs. Meanwhile, it seems Voyager 1 is destined to wander the Milky Way forever.
That is the end of question 8. In a moment, you'll hear question 9. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 9. Listen to the following talk about a famous sportsman, Usain Bolt, and then answer the questions below. You will hear the talk twice.
Usain Bolt is a unique sportsman, probably the fastest human being that has ever lived. But what makes him so different is his attitude as well as his obvious talent. Not only does he regularly break world records, but he does so with humour and makes it look easy. At the Beijing Olympics, he won his race with his shoelaces untied. Another time, he winked playfully at the TV cameras whilst warming up. In the 2012 Olympic Games, when he'd crossed the finishing line, he did 5 push-ups, one for each of his Olympic gold medals. He didn't seem tired at all and wanted everyone to know it. So what was life like for him as a child? His family was not wealthy. He went to an ordinary school in a small town in northwest Jamaica. Usain lived with his parents, brother and sister in a modest bungalow. Nowadays, he still lives with his brother, but in an exclusive apartment in the capital, along with a bodyguard and a chef. As a child, he was hyperactive, easily bored, and was even known to run off to the nearby town to play arcade games there. But he showed his talent early on and was a natural sprinter, doing best at shorter, faster races. He won many competitions at school, then at national level in Jamaica, but he was not always successful due to a lack of determination. Then came the turning point. At the age of 15, he won the 200 metres at the 2002 World Junior Championships. Immediately afterwards, he was given the nickname of Lightning Bolt. This altered his whole attitude, and it struck him that he had the ability to be something very special. He felt the burning need to win. He went on to win lots of gold medals, for example at the 2012 Olympic Games in London and in Moscow in 2013. What makes him such a good athlete? Is it down to luck or having the right build of body? He admits that he has natural ability. He doesn't seem to have to take much care with his diet. Many athletes ensure they eat exactly the right combination of proteins and carbohydrates and will restrict their diet to lean meat and pasta during training periods. Usain, on the other hand, enjoys fried potatoes and chicken nuggets. He certainly seems to do well on this combination. But he explains that in order to win major races, he has to train hard. Firstly, he is tall, which makes him heavier than many of his rivals and slower out of the starting blocks. He also has one leg slightly shorter than the other. So every morning he starts exercising at 6:30, practicing his starts and his reaction times, working on different techniques. His level of success demands determination and hard work. He is also a talented cricketer and footballer. In fact, he has recently said that if offered the chance, he would like to play football for Manchester United. With his determination and talent, who knows? This might be a possibility when he decides to retire from athletics. With Usain Bolt, anything is possible.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Usain Bolt is a unique sportsman, probably the fastest human being that has ever lived. But what makes him so different is his attitude as well as his obvious talent. Not only does he regularly break world records, but he does so with humour and makes it look easy. At the Beijing Olympics, he won his race with his shoelaces untied. Another time, he winked playfully at the TV cameras whilst warming up. In the 2012 Olympic Games, when he'd crossed the finishing line, he did 5 push-ups, one for each of his Olympic gold medals. He didn't seem tired at all and wanted everyone to know it. So what was life like for him as a child? His family was not wealthy. He went to an ordinary school in a small town in northwest Jamaica. Usain lived with his parents, brother and sister in a modest bungalow. Nowadays, he still lives with his brother, but in an exclusive apartment in the capital, along with a bodyguard and a chef. As a child, he was hyperactive, easily bored, and was even known to run off to the nearby town to play arcade games there. But he showed his talent early on and was a natural sprinter, doing best at shorter, faster races. He won many competitions at school, then at national level in Jamaica, but he was not always successful due to a lack of determination. Then came the turning point. At the age of 15, he won the 200 metres at the 2002 World Junior Championships. Immediately afterwards, he was given the nickname of Lightning Bolt. This altered his whole attitude, and it struck him that he had the ability to be something very special. He felt the burning need to win. He went on to win lots of gold medals, for example at the 2012 Olympic Games in London and in Moscow in 2013. What makes him such a good athlete? Is it down to luck or having the right build of body? He admits that he has natural ability. He doesn't seem to have to take much care with his diet. Many athletes ensure they eat exactly the right combination of proteins and carbohydrates and will restrict their diet to lean meat and pasta during training periods. Usain, on the other hand, enjoys fried potatoes and chicken nuggets. He certainly seems to do well on this combination. But he explains that in order to win major races, he has to train hard. Firstly, he is tall, which makes him heavier than many of his rivals and slower out of the starting blocks. He also has one leg slightly shorter than the other. So every morning he starts exercising at 6:30, practicing his starts and his reaction times, working on different techniques. His level of success demands determination and hard work. He is also a talented cricketer and footballer. In fact, he has recently said that if offered the chance, he would like to play football for Manchester United. With his determination and talent, who knows? This might be a possibility when he decides to retire from athletics. With Usain Bolt, anything is possible.
That is the end of question 9. In a moment, you will hear question 10. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 10. Listen to the following interview with a psychologist, Dr. Peterman, about the benefits and drawbacks of being neat and tidy, and answer the questions below. You'll hear the interview twice.
What does your desk or workspace tell us about you as a person? To help us, here is Dr. Peterman.
Good evening.
I guess common sense tells us that untidiness must be a bad thing. Is that true?
Well, no one likes to see a dirty street or a broken-down building. The broken windows theory, proposed by experts in 1982, suggested that even slight damage can lead to worse disorder.
Can you explain this theory to us?
Consider a building with one or two broken windows. If the windows are not repaired, the situation will escalate. criminals might break in. If builders or decorators had been sent in early to fix things, nothing worse would have happened.
Could this theory be applied to our everyday lives?
Well, being untidy in your own home can make you inefficient. If your desk is a mess, you won't be able to find class notes, which can mean poor grades. And if you leave your bags and books all over the floor, someone could fall over them. Being disorganized can also cause costly accidents. You might spill coffee on your computer. If you're at work, it could mean the loss of your job. At the very least, it can be a big distraction. Also, experts have discovered that people who are organized typically eat better and live longer than people who are disorganized.
How do you prove this scientifically?
Researchers recently conducted a series of experiments. In the first one, college students spent time in either a neat or messy office. The students filled in questionnaires unrelated to the study. After 10 minutes, they were told they could leave and were offered an apple or a chocolate bar. Those students who had been in the well-organized office were twice as likely to choose the apple as those who had been sitting amongst the mess.
Are there any pluses to being untidy?
Well, in another experiment, the students were placed in a messy or neat office and asked to dream up new uses for ping pong balls. Their behaviour was observed closely. Those in the messy spaces generated ideas and showed significantly more creativity than those who showed patience and dedication in the tidy offices.
Have there been any other studies on this subject?
There's a third experiment you might like to hear about. In this experiment, adults were given a choice of two drinks, new or traditional. The untidy volunteers chose the new one. The tidy volunteers opted for the familiar version. The scientists concluded that untidiness can produce fresh insights.
So, what can we learn from these experiments?
My advice would be, if you need to think creatively for a future project, let the clutter rise and free your imagination. But if your main goal is to eat well or develop a fitness routine, keep your working space neat and tidy. By doing this, the naturally messy can get some of the discipline of the conscientious.
Now you will hear the interview again.
What does your desk or workspace tell us about you as a person? To help us, here is Dr. Peterman.
Good evening.
I guess common sense tells us that untidiness must be a bad thing. Is that true?
Well, no one likes to see a dirty street or a broken down building. The broken windows theory proposed by experts in 1982 suggested that even slight damage can lead to worse disorder.
Can you explain this theory to us?
Consider a building with one or two broken windows. If the windows are not repaired, the situation will escalate. Criminals might break in. If builders or decorators had been sent in early to fix things, nothing worse would have happened.
Could this theory be applied to our everyday lives?
Well, being untidy in your own home can make you inefficient. If your desk is a mess, you won't be able to find class notes, which can mean poor grades. And if you leave your bags and books all over the floor, someone could fall over them. Being disorganized can also cause costly accidents. You might spill coffee on your computer. If you're at work, it could mean the loss of your job. At the very least, it can be a big distraction. Also, experts have discovered that people who are organized typically eat better and live longer than people who are disorganized.
How do you prove this scientifically?
Researchers recently conducted a series of experiments. In the first one, college students spent time in either a neat or messy office. The students filled in questionnaires unrelated to the study. After 10 minutes, they were told they could leave and were offered an apple or a chocolate bar. Those students who had been in the well-organized office were twice as likely to choose the apple as those who had been sitting amongst the mess.
Are there any pluses to being untidy?
Well, in another experiment, the students were placed in a messy or neat office and asked to dream up new uses for ping-pong balls. Their behaviour was observed closely. Those in the messy spaces generated ideas and showed significantly more creativity than those who showed patience and dedication in the tidy offices.
Have there been any other studies on this subject?
There's a third experiment you might like to hear about. In this experiment, adults were given a choice of two drinks, new or traditional. The untidy volunteers chose the new one. The tidy volunteers opted for the familiar version. The scientists concluded that untidiness can produce fresh insights.
So, what can we learn from these experiments?
My advice would be, if you need to think creatively for a future project, let the clutter rise and free your imagination. But if your main goal is to eat well or develop a fitness routine, keep your working space neat and tidy. By doing this, the naturally messy can get some of the discipline of the conscientious.
That is the end of question 10 and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers. Thank you, everyone.